Hello, hi, this is Houston McHale, president of Thermal Contractors Alliance from Omaha, Nebraska.
Hi, Houston, welcome.
Thank you.
Someone just joined?
Colleen Kokas.
Hi, Colleen.
Hi.
Thanks, Colleen, for that, for the reference last week. It was great.
Oh, good.
In fact, we'll be mentioning it today because it's really involved in community development and community organization. It's a great reference. I hope they update it.
They are going to. And that was the state program contacts, right? And programs?
Right. It was volunteer state contacts, but it's very relevant even.
Yeah. Generally, they update it so that they can roll it out at the Brownfield Conference.
Great.
So I would anticipate it being updated before May.
Good. Okay, why don't we get...
Hi, did someone just join?
Yes, Judith Underwood, Cape Cod Community College, Massachusetts.
Hi, Judith.
Glow, of course, this sounds like Groundhog Day, but what have you heard from Joe lately in Washington?
Well, just yesterday, he told me that they are hoping that the RFP is going to be issued to the public in the next week or so. He said the tentative deadline for submission will be around March 27th, and that they anticipate that the new grantees will be announced in early June. So a little more definite than it was the last time we had a PLC meeting.
Any indication whether there were going to be any changes in the guidelines that were significant?
I haven't heard of any significant changes. Mike, have you?
I haven't. They tend to be the same year after year with slight changes. Now, one of the things that Joe had indicated earlier is why it had taken longer is they were going to make some changes.
Someone just join?
Yes, George Lewis, APRI, Pittsburgh.
Hi, George.
Hi there.
We're talking about the RFP that it's going to be issued probably in the next week. Probably before the next PLC conference call, they were going to make some slight changes. The big change last year, of course, was the addition of a couple more program areas, specifically wastewater, water and wastewater, which was a significant change and really gave grantees and applicants an opportunity to tap into a very large market. In recent years, if we track what has evolved, there was a time when we had the energy crisis where EPA had kind of jumped on the bandwagon and a lot of the grantees were doing some energy training. They quickly got out of that because DOE, it was kind of a cross, two agencies were HUD, between HUD and DOE, they were kind of conflicting in terms of their mission, so EPA wanted to stay out of the energy, particularly insulation and that type of business, and restricted energy in terms of the environmental side of energy, in terms of working with solar panels or working with wind, but they got away from the insulation and the checking the houses for leaks and that type of thing. They did move, while they moved away from those energy jobs, they moved into the wastewater. What will be interesting when this RFP comes out to see if they were able to bring in some more program offices. Particularly, I'm waiting for them to bring in air programs, which is not in there right now. And what happens is when some of these other program offices bring, they're all appropriated money in kind of a smokestack type fashion. And so what happens is Office of Solid Waste and Emergency Response, which sponsors this program, and it's the only, really the only job training grant program in EPA, they're using their money, and they do go around and ask some of the other program offices if they would like to kick some money into the fund, and if they do, they would include training in their area, and they've gotten small amounts in different areas, which was reflected in the RFP. So one of the first places to look when this RFP comes out, as Colleen said, is what will be the areas that they say you could train in. One of the things that Joe was mentioning, last year, they required mandatory training in at least awareness training of all the sponsors, all the people who had kind of kicked in money and were involved in this grant program. They wanted you to have at least awareness training in all of those areas. He said that this year they were looking at provisions to allow you to specialize in certain areas. So that will be interesting. So I would say the two main changes will probably be, one, if there are more contributors, for example, if air contributes this year or not, to the extent water is involved in some of these other program offices. And the other thing will be their mandatory training requirements. And the way most of the grantees handle that is they did tend to specialize in one area. If they were doing a basically a wastewater training program, they would have an awareness course or incorporate all the other program offices in those courses. And that's how they handle that in writing their grant. So it's not an insurmountable task that you have to train awareness for 8 or 9 different program areas. But it requires a little finesse in terms of incorporating awareness training of those areas into your curriculum. So, but we will find this out. The other interesting thing, of course, will be the funding level. It'll probably be the same as before. The 3 years, the $200,000. They may increase or decrease the number of grants they give depending on how much money they were able to get together. I'm sure everyone's wondering, what about the fiscal cliff and what about that that whole issue, and will it affect the program? And my feeling is that the program is too far along. It's already in the process, so that I don't think that that's going to necessarily affect it right now at this year. So I think it may, if they got some funding cuts, they might, instead of having 12 grants, they might cut it down to 10 or 9 or something like that. But I expect that the funding levels will be the same. And as far as the criteria, I expect they're going to be fairly similar. They haven't changed those very much over the years. So when we get down to there's two types of criteria. One, do you qualify to even go on to the next step? And those are, we'll be talking about in future calls. And then the second one is the real important one, is how you're graded and those very specific criteria. And I thought one of the things we would talk about today is one of the most important ones that takes the most time, and that's called community involvement. Community involvement requires, it takes up about 25% of the grading of this grant. For example, they're going to look at your grant proposal, and 25% of the points that they assign, and those of you who have grants, remember this from the last go-around, will be on your involvement in the community. And the problem with community involvement, or the issue with community involvement, is it takes time to establish that. And unfortunately, they're giving us a month and a half to 2 months to establish our community involvement if you haven't already. So it's really time to get started, and it's not too early. one of the concerns people have when it comes to community involvement, and particularly if you're writing a proposal or if you're just getting started, or even if you have a grant and you're not sure where it's going, is, do I want to start announcing all these things and I don't even have the money yet? And the answer is yes, you do want to do that for a couple of reasons. One is, to get the dollars, you need to demonstrate that you're already involved in the community. Also, if you set up your advisory committees and your community involvements and you make your announcements and you don't get the grant, you write a great proposal but you don't get the grant, it doesn't mean that you won't have a chance next year to resubmit, and you want to keep those partnerships going. And the nice thing about the partnerships that you establish is you may even have an opportunity to go back to your partners and the people that you announced that you were intending on submitting for EPA funding. You may have to go back to them and say, well, we did not get that, but we're going to submit next year. And some of those partners may decide that we're going to give you some planning money, or we're going to give you, we want to work with you because we think this is a good idea, and we might be able to find some money to give you some planning grant, a little planning grant, or we could start it another way. We've had people who have actually started programs, and we do have people that have programs on the call, that the programs are going, and you've got programs in place now. So the fact that you're going to announce this publicly in no way should be dependent on you absolutely getting it. And the reason you have to do this right away is when you get the RFP and you start looking at it, they're going to, as I said, count 25 points for your community involvement. And they ask some very specific questions when it gets down to it. They say, to what extent have you notified or involved or held public comment sessions regarding the target community before applying or developing your proposal? So they're going to actually ask you in the grant RFP, have you announced it at a city council meeting, for example? Have you made any public announcements that you're going to be doing this? And I'm not saying that you have to put up banners or anything or take out full-page ads, but clearly you can announce at a city council meeting, ask if you could make an announcement. You can have, if you could find the community meeting of some sort, and what you're going to want to do is definitely document, if you do this, you're going to want to document the meetings. It might be a church meeting, and you may want to indicate that you are planning on submitting for a job training program, a grant proposal that would involve the community. And you'd like everyone to know about it, and then you'd like them to get involved. And this is going to be really important. When we talk about community partners, it's kind of a subjective and fairly nebulous word, but there's partners are exist in a lot of different forms. You've got the community partners, which are the partners we think about. They're our target population partners. They're, if you're going to work in a neighborhood, have you talked to the church in that neighborhood? That's the predominant religious organizations. The non-governmental organizations that are working in that neighborhood, for example, there might be a community group. And this is a great way to make your public announcements, is to find out if you're working in a certain section, say of Pittsburgh or Philadelphia, find out what the neighborhood groups are, when they're going to have a neighborhood meeting, and see if you can make an announcement that you would like, you're planning on a job training program, you're not sure that you're going to be able to get it, you're in the proposal process, you'd like them to be involved, because another part of this proposal, when it comes out, is going to ask for a reference list. And the references they're going to be asking for are going to be organizations that they could contact that have helped you in developing your proposal. They're going to want a phone numbers and contact names, and they're going to call those people and say, are you familiar with this program? Are they doing a job training proposal with you? And you're going to have to provide them with that in the proposal. You're going to also have to provide them with two employers that are involved in writing or helping you design your program. You're going to have to also provide them with two community-based organizations that help you in developing your program. So these are things that you can't do in a week. You can't do in a couple of weeks. It's going to take you a couple of months. So that's about the time we have when these proposals are due. It's a good time to start now, because if you start now, this will be fresh on the people you contact's mind when you submit this proposal, and you're going to want to keep these people up on it. Now, when you start contacting these community groups, you want to also start developing your advisory board. And when we're talking about advisory boards, we're not talking about getting the mayor and the chairman of the board of some big power company. That is not at all impressive. We're talking about not a board of directors, but an advisory board. And these will be people that in your community that will help you develop your program. So your advisory board may be the Fulton area community group. It may be the Pittsburgh Tank and Pipe Company. It may be those represent employers that would be potential employers. It may be a church. And again, one thing you should not be concerned, because this is a government grant. Religious organizations are quite involved with EPA in the environmental movement. The environmental justice movement was started with a religious organization and quite involved in it. So having religious representation, particularly because religious organizations have strong community ties, and that's a great thing. Is there an environmental justice group in your community? Now, the thing about it is, you've got to try to get these partners as close to the community that you're going to be targeting. If you're going to be targeting an entire city, then it's one thing, but particularly if you're looking at a neighborhood that has been discriminated and isolated and perhaps been disenfranchised, you want to work specifically with people in those groups. And when you look at the winning proposals, they are people who have identified target areas of a city, the target population, and they've identified those groups and community groups who link them to that community. And this is, if you are already a community group, this is fairly easy and understandable. If you're an academic organization, or if you're a consulting firm, or a WIB, or a governmental agency, this is a little harder concept to understand, because we, in academic and government and large organizations, have an adversity to working with these community groups. So it's much harder to sometimes outreach, but it's an absolute necessity to...
Mike, can I interrupt for just a second, please?
Yes, yes.
I just wanted to ask everyone, I wanted to ask the participants, could you please all mute your phones while Mike is talking? I know I'm having a very difficult time hearing him, and I know that Christine is having a difficult time hearing him. There's a lot of distracting background noises coming through, and it's sometimes overpowering you. So if people could mute their phones, unless they have something to say, that would be very helpful.
Great. I'll talk louder. I think next time I'll try to a different phone, a different phone line. Maybe that'll also help.
Okay, great. Thanks, everyone.
So, anyway, the the partners in the neighborhood, and I really emphasize this because it's really important to the EPA reviewers that who are your community groups? Give me names. Give me organizations. Give me the diversity of these groups. Do you have a neighborhood church that's involved? And those are great places to announce that you're going to be doing this, and it's a public announcement. And again, document it that XYZ Church of God or A&EM announced on Sunday the 18th that we're going to be submitting a job training proposal to train local residents in environmental technology. And that would be documented, and it would be put in your proposal in the contact. Not only that, is then getting perhaps the pastor to be one of the members of your advisory board. And the next step after that is keeping him up informed and getting his phone number and indicating to him that you're submitting the grant, and he may come to a meeting, a couple of meetings that you have in the process of doing this, and then submitting that name and phone number to EPA with your grant proposal, so that when they call him, he'll say, "Oh yeah, I'm involved in it, and I've been involved, and I hope they get it." And in the case that you don't get it, then you do need to go back and say, "We didn't get it this year, but this is every year. We're going to resubmit, but we're also going to see if there's some other funds in the mayor's office or in the, from the state DNR that we might be able to do some more planning and keep this alive and keep it going." So you're going to keep your team together. So this is definitely important. This can't overemphasize this importance. If you don't have the community partners, we're talking 25% of the grant. Now, we're also going to be talking about training partners. You're going to, and last week we talked about allowable and disallowable costs, and in the notes we talked about consultants and getting three bids. If you're an organization that already have trainers on board, you've got those partnerships already set up. If you don't have trainers on board, you may want to contact them and tell them what you're doing, indicating, and if they have not bid and you have not sent out proposals, they may be involved in the project, but you may also have to indicate that they will be bidding if they're partners, they don't have to. They don't have to bid, but if they're a contractor or a consultant, they can be involved in the as a partner, but if they're going to be doing work, then they'll have to bid on an RFP. You're going to want to involve those training partners also in this section, and who you're contacting and who you've lined up or have as possibilities. Now, part of this proposal will have a lot of information, and if you've been involved in training, as some of you have already, they're going to ask you a lot of questions about your training experience and who you've placed and your employers. And employment partners are another part of this community involvement. The employment partners are going to be those people that if you're already doing training, as some of you have, those employment partners are going to be people who have hired some of your people that trained. And you may be, as in Houston's point, you've got people out there already, and you've already got some employers that you could count on, and you want to bring those, if you can, bring them in on the advisory committee and keep them informed on what you're planning on doing. And if you can, and they are involved in your training, you want to be able to document where they've gone to work and what kind of work they've done and what your history in that training is, because when this RFP comes out, it's going to be asking you questions like, if you've done work in the past in environmental education or training, have you placed them? Where have you placed them? Can we contact those employers regarding that training? So they're going to ask for those questions. So you're going to want to get in touch with those people. The last type of partner that we talk about in community involvement is your government partners. And, of course, those of you who are WIBs or government agencies, this is not as much an issue for you. You know, while if you're a government agency or a WIB, your challenge is to get out into the community and establish these community partners that we're not used to working with. But if you're a government agency, you already probably know all the people that are working in this area, and you know you have the contacts. But if you're a community group and you're working the other side of this, it's sometimes very difficult to work your way through government agencies. And if you're not familiar with how government works and the intertwining of the government agencies, it could be mind-boggling and could be a big black box. And you can find yourself staring at trying to find contact names and phone numbers, and it could be overwhelming. But if the important thing there, your job is to make that connection with those government people in different agencies who will have an impact on your program. And, of course, the obvious one is the Workforce Investment Board. The other obvious agencies include the Department of Environmental Resources. Colleen provided us last week, and if you haven't downloaded that report, you really need to. It's a report of all the voluntary state contacts. EPA has a lot of good information on contacts, but they don't keep up really well with the state contacts. But that particular publication is really good because it has names and contacts and what they're doing in the state. And you can find out the different agencies who are involved in your state with remediation. And don't get, because it's a voluntary cleanup program, don't let that bother you, that it's all about those are the players in the environmental cleanup in terms of brownfields. So if you contact those people and those agencies in your state, download the report, and, of course, a new one will be out after the grant is due, but try to find out your state, print out those pages, and contact those people in the report that are involved in cleanup. And then from them, ask who else is involved that you could contact. And it's kind of going to lead you through this web of government agencies who are involved. And it's going to involve HUD. If you're involved in lead, HUD will get involved. There may be an energy department that's going to be involved to some extent. You're going to have a lot of municipal agencies involved. If you're getting involved in solid waste, wastewater, you're going to get into the whole municipal agency issue, because these are municipal services that are handled on a local level. So you're going to have the county landfills, you're going to have the county wastewater, wastewater programs, and these are major programs that are involved in this. So you're going to want to try to ferret them out. So those are all of these community partners that they're going to be asking about. And it's not too early, and it may even be starting to get too late to start contacting these people. So I would get on them. And if you already have a grant, I would use just this call as kind of a reminder of getting back and touching base with those people in the community that are really going to impact your program. And, of course, and as I've reminded in the last three calls, is you want to, if you are going to submit a grant, you want to contact the regional rep, because when the RFP comes out, they're going to have probably two briefing calls with a bunch of PowerPoint slides that'll go through the RFP and what everything means. But if you want to talk about your very specific situation in your community and tips that could help you write a better grant or do a better proposal as it relates to getting federal funding, you've got to do it before the RFP comes out, and that's about in the next week. So, again, I would remind you to submit that. So we're going to, in the notes also, of course, remind you of the two meetings coming up, the Green Jobs meeting in April and the Brownfields in May. And there's also a reminder about they're looking for members of an environmental justice committee. The NEJAC, they call it, is an EPA committee that you may want to submit. It's a voluntary committee, but you may want to submit your name for consideration to be on this committee. It's a great opportunity to get involved in environmental justice in EPA. So, did anyone want to comment anything in terms of community involvement and getting involved in your community and what you've done that you found pretty helpful or sources?
This is Colleen Kokas, and I think I'm with New Jersey DEP, the Department of Environmental Protection, and I think that perhaps I provide a unique perspective in that we have a pretty good finger on the pulse of redevelopment in the area for which we applied for the job training grant. So what we did was, this specific urban area had a lot of community groups that were working on, various, community-driven initiatives. So we brought them together to talk to them about the projects that were underway or planned, and then also took it a step further and reached out to, so for example, there's a very large project in Camden that's being done by the Salvation Army. So we brought the Salvation Army in, we brought their environmental consultant and engineers in, we brought in the local county MUA, the Municipal Utility Authority, and we brought them in all as community partners for, a couple of things, which was to help us, identify potential trainees, to help spread the word about the program, to help identify employment options, real employment or placement for our trainees. So we sort of worked the angle of looking at what brownfield projects we knew were underway, even if they were in the assessment phase. There could be work either as a field tech, or there could be, if the project was further along and closer to, actual construction at a brownfield site, to actually, maybe if there was solar, to incorporate people that are trained in solar, or just the fact that they had 40-hour health and safety, might give them up on a construction job. So that's sort of how we went into preparing for putting in an application with EPA.
Colleen, how did you ferret out the contacts? Did you have a general meeting announcement or start sending?
We didn't.
Emails?
And I think we have I don't want to say an unfair advantage, but we just have a different perspective in that we are already working in this instance, in the city of Camden, on a number of brownfield projects. So I came out of our brownfield office, not too long ago. And so I reached out to the brownfield office to say, okay, I know of these projects in Camden. What other projects? Who are you working with? And I actually brought the brownfield office in, and I had been working in Camden previously, so, I knew some of the players, but, used the brownfield office to help organize sort of that meeting of, we want to talk about, creating some capacity here so that we can put in a strong application that covers who's going to recruit, who's going to train, who's going to place, trainees. So we really worked, I worked with, first my historical, information that I had about Camden, and then brought in, one of my colleagues from the brownfield office. So that was really sort of how we started.
So once you get one contact, you say, who else could we bring in? And yeah, you can name someone else.
And that worked for us. I don't know that it, you know, if it'll work in other states, but if you're armed with that, you know, that brownfield or that voluntary cleanup contact person that's in that EPA, you know, guidance document or reference document, you know, if you call them up and just say, you know, what projects are in the assessment phase or in, you know, close to redevelopment where we might be able to tap into, you know, some potential employment opportunities, you know, after these folks are trained. The other thing that we used this, you know, sort of the community involvement for was to help identify the aspects of training that we needed to include to help place them at least in their, you know, sector, whether it was the redevelopment of, you know, this Salvation Army recreation facility, or whether it was with the utility authority, or whether it was, you know, in the environmental consulting field. So I think our employment partners also gave us, you know, sort of a wide range of perspectives in terms of what the needs were. So were we training them for the right things?
So the question you always ask is, who else can I contact that would have an interest in this program? And if they can't give you an answer right now, I ask them to email you the name and contact information of someone that they think would be interested in your program, from either training or employment or participation of some sort. Would you agree with that in terms of building out this? We're trying to build out this partnership network in the community.
Colleen, I would say that, you know, if somebody asks me, you know, who else can help me, my first question is going to be, help you with what?
Mm-hmm.
So I think that to the extent that people can be clear that I need help with, you know, potential job placement, like where can these trainees find employment based on the projects that you know are underway, you know, whether it's, you know, in a specific, you know, area like a Pittsburgh or, you know, if it's, you know, further reaching depending on your, you know, whatever your geographic region is that you sort of represent.
Yeah. Hi, can I say this? This Houston and Omaha, I've been blessed in this area right here due to the fact that it's like three other different organizations on my same block. And since we have been like a kind of advocacy with the city about this underdeveloped area and all the work that's going on, but nobody's trained to do it, so we end up aligning ourselves with like several different community partners. And every Saturday, every second Saturday of the month, we have a community meeting at a local high school. Then every second Monday of every month here in North Omaha, I have a meeting here in my facility. And it's where the community come in. Also in my building, we got the president of the ministers. They also hold, so we've been blessed with that. That wasn't a problem because everybody around here want to see change. And the only way we could change this stuff is if we get some of these incoming and working, some of these people that never really had a job, don't know what to do, and, you know, then dropped out of school or whatever, is to get them trained. So I got a whole city behind me just like, can you do it? Can you do it? You know.
You can do it now, Houston. What you've got to do, you've got a great setup. Now, you're going to have to make sure you make the announcement so you're planning on submission, and you're going to have to document it, and you're going to have to include it in the grant proposal. And that's going to be key. You've got a perfect situation where you've got this, you have been blessed with this beautiful situation, but the trick is going to be getting that transferred over to the reviewers who don't know all the wonderful things you've got in terms of community involvement. So you're going to have to document, and you're going to have to put down in very, you're going to have to hit them between the eyes.
I have to go.
This is who we did.
God bless you all.
We're beyond our time, so we keep these 30 minutes. So we'll see you all on on the 20th, and we'll continue with this. And by that time, the RFP will be out, so we'll talk more about that. So thanks, everyone.
Thank
you. All right, thank
you. Okay.
Right, okay.
Bye.
Bye.
I don't know. No. Who is that?
Some white man. Well, he just wants information on the test and nothing might happen.
What is my number? 412-562-0.